Do you support or oppose term limits for members of Congress? That's today's big question. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, July 9th. The issue is in the news because all four Republican candidates running for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District pledged this week to limit the number of terms they'll serve if elected. We'll talk about why. We'll talk about the pros and cons of term limits. We'll welcome your questions and your views for our guest political scientist at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We do have that poll online as well at wpr.org/joy. Let me welcome our guest, Charlie Jacobs, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, we hear about term limits every so often, and there's calls to impose term limits, but no term limits yet. Why doesn't this go anywhere?
Well, they had sort of their heyday from about 1990 to 2000. So that was when we were really talking about them in the United States. I think there are a couple of reasons why we don't hear a whole lot about them in Wisconsin and in a lot of other states. The first is that almost all of the states that have term limits today and retain them, they got them through the initiative process, which is sort of a voter promoted change to the state constitution or state law. And it's initiated by the voters, it's initiated by the public, and they push it through, often at the real displeasure of elected officials who don't want to lose their jobs automatically. And there are just so many states that have that process, and Wisconsin is not one of them. So it's often very hard to get legislators sort of off of their duffs and getting them to push this kind of automatic retirement program for themselves. So that's one of the issues. I think the other issue is that in 1995, the United States Supreme Court said that states could not impose term limits on national offices. So you couldn't restrict the members of the House of Representatives in Washington nor on the United States Senate. And I think that had at least an effect on the public because that's a lot of their ire is directed towards Washington, D.C., as opposed to their state legislatures. And since they couldn't do that, maybe they thought it wasn't really going to be all that effective to do it in their own state capital. So that's a couple of reasons why I think you've seen sort of a tamping down of the interest in this, although it pops up here and there, especially from candidates who are running for an open seat or candidates who are challenging a longtime incumbent.
Right, and there is a race for an open seat. There was a longtime incumbent in that seat, the 6th Congressional District. Tom Petri, Republican U.S. Representative Tom Petri, is not running for re-election, and there are four Republicans running with the hopes of replacing him. And this latest round in term limit talk started when State Representative Dewey Strobel posted a column on Monday about his support for a constitutional amendment setting term limits for members of Congress. Then State Senator Glenn Grothman said that he would serve no more than 5 2-year terms. Senator Joe Lipum said he would limit himself to 6 terms. And then Strobel said he had no plans on serving more than 5 terms. And again, this happened in pretty short order. Does this speak to the importance of this issue in this race or what?
You know, I think a lot of it is generated by the length of service for Tom Petri. And although I can't recall Grothman saying this specifically, you know, part of the reason that he was going to challenge Petri before Petri pulled out of the race and decided to retire was this sense that he had lost touch with the public, that he had served so long that he had forgotten his obligations to the state and to his district. So I think that was an underlying current because, I mean, Petri is going to finish up with 3.5 decades or more in the U.S. House of Representatives, and then prior to that he was in the state Senate. So he spent more than 4 decades as an elected official. And so I think that there was this undercurrent of it's too long. And so I think that Dewey Strobel has sort of picked up on this sort of theme and wants to suggest that he's going to be that citizen legislator who listens to the public and recognizes he can do the job, do it well, but at some point your expiration date is passed and you should step aside and let somebody else do the job and return to your previous employment and just, you know, work among the people again. You know, and this is a very, you know, a theme that I think resonates with the public because they don't want to see these really entrenched politicians. They don't want to see these people who they might perceive as taking advantage of the system and forgetting where their roots are. And so I think it's an easy thing for officials who are running for office to grab onto and agree to, although we often see with legislators the promise is not kept. And in fact, you can just look at somebody like Scott Krug, who's a state representative right now in the state of Wisconsin, and he promised in 2010 he would only run for two terms, and he's now running for a third. So, you know, these kinds of promises evaporate rather quickly once you get into office.
Yeah, because then it changes too. I can do a lot of good still if I stay.
And that's what I think Tom Petri would have argued if he had stayed in the race, is that, look, you want me there because I have such longevity that I'm respected. People listen to me. I have the connections. He's the chair of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. There are a lot of roads in Wisconsin. There are a lot of roads that need repair as well as mass transit. And so, you know, he can bring some resources to the state that the state does desperately need in certain areas. And that's the kind of experience somebody like Petri, I would argue, you need. And I think that sometimes that's not learned until you take the oath of office and start to see how a legislative institution works, sort of the sausage making that we often talk about that's rather ugly, but sometimes necessary to get your constituents what they need.
You know, on the other hand, people who oppose term limits say, well, just leave this up to the voters to decide who gets another term and who doesn't. So what are the pros and cons of that argument?
Well, certainly that's, I think, one of the elements that a lot of opponents of term limits will look to, and they'll say the ultimate term limit is the voters deciding that someone has run their course, is no longer serving the needs of the constituents. Of course, to counter that argument are the problems that, you know, have become a recurrent theme in politics today, which is money in politics, that we can't cut through all of the television ads, the radio ads, the sniping of lobbying groups and 503Cs that promote these individuals. You don't know where this secret dark money is coming from, and these incumbents have these huge advantages over someone else. And for that reason, you can't rely on the public to know well. Not that the public is stupid or doesn't know how to vote well, but that they just don't have the time, the resources to counteract all of this money that's floating around in the political process today. So that you need sort of this automatic check, this safety valve that says you can't co-opt these elected officials. You can't buy them and then protect them in office because the public just doesn't know whether or not that elected official is doing well. So this is the automatic. This is the way for the public to be able to see a person leave office and get a fresh face in there who might be more connected to the public.
We are talking about term limits and the arguments for and against term limits, especially for members of Congress. Talking about term limits because all four Republican candidates for Wisconsin's 6th congressional district say they will limit the number of terms that they will serve if elected. Do you support or oppose term limits for Congress? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Charlie Jacobs, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with a guest political scientist about the arguments for and against term limits for members of Congress, and we invite you to weigh in on this week's big question. Do you support or oppose term limits for Congress. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Talking with Charlie Jacobs, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. I think we should establish, just so everybody is reminded, that U.S. representatives serving in the House are up for election every 2 years. Senators' terms run 6 years. The Constitution does not limit the number of terms that someone can serve in Congress right now. There are proposals, and there is one that was, reintroduced in the House in earlier this year in February. And this particular bill would it would require a constitutional amendment to impose term limits. And this one calls for a maximum of 24 years of service, meaning you could have 12 years each in both the House and the Senate. That doesn't sound all that limiting to me, Professor Jacobs.
No, and I suppose it's in the eye of the beholder. You know, these proposals come, and I think they're, since they're through the lens of the legislators themselves, they're trying to think about what kind of term do you have to be able to serve to know the institution and be able to do the work of the people. I mean, there is sort of a folk way of both the House and the Senate, particularly in the Senate, that you're almost like the kid at the Thanksgiving Day table, right? You're supposed to be seen and not heard during your first term in office. Just sit on your hands and watch how everything works, soak it all up like a sponge, and then when you get back, you can really start to do the work that your constituents want you to do. But there's so much to know, and there's so many relationships to cultivate, that for your first term, you do very little except really learn. There was a member of Congress in Ohio who quipped once that, you know, his first 6 months were just trying to figure out where all the bathrooms were in the Capitol. And so I think that they recognize that you've got to have a few years just to get the institution under your feet, and then you can really start to do the work. If you limit it any more, you're not going to really accomplish anything, or you're not going to accomplish it particularly well. And you're also going to create other ancillary problems. I mean, because some of the research on this has noted that in states with term limits, civility has dropped quite a bit, and contention among individuals and between the parties has gone up, because everybody comes out of the gate at full speed, because they want to accomplish what they told their constituents they would. And so they want to sort of knock down everybody who's in their way to make sure that their bills pass and their things get accomplished. And so if you have a longer time in office under term limits, hopefully it'll tamp down that problem a little bit. So, yeah, and it will take a constitutional amendment at the national level. The United States Supreme Court said that because the qualifications for office are specified and enumerated in Article 1, and unless you go through the Article 5 constitutional amendment process, you can't change it through simple legislation at either the state level or the national level. And remember, constitutional amendment requires two-thirds of the members of both the House and the Senate to pass the language, and then ratification by three-quarters of the states. So there are several hurdles to get over, and they're pretty high hurdles. So to achieve this is going to be quite difficult.
Let's take some calls. Emily in DeForest is with us. Hello, Emily.
Hi there. I'm actually against term limits. I've watched how term limits played out in California in the state legislature, and basically it's just created a faster revolving door between being a lobbyist and being a legislator, where people who have money see running for office as being the ticket to a higher income as a lobbyist. They invest their money in their campaign, they win, they do their limited amount of service, and then boom, they're into the lobby business, and they make a lot more money with those connections. And so term limits to me make it harder for the average person to run for office and make it more into what can I do to up my career kind of position. I believe that legislators like are statesmen when they stay in, and that it is up to the people to remove them from office by picking somebody else rather than have an arbitrary term.
Thank you very much, Emily. Well, a couple of points to have you follow up on, Professor Jacobs. First of all, the point that she said that this increases term limits would increase the revolving door from from being a lawmaker to being a lobbyist.
Now, Emily makes a really good point because, you know, Dewey Strobel's position is this: well, I'll serve and then I'll go back to my everyday life. And I think that's the expectation when we think about a citizen legislator, that if they were a farmer, they're going to go back and be a farmer. But most of the data show that, no, that's not what happens, that most members who are term limited, they just go into some other political profession, and it could be lobbying, it could be another branch of the state legislature. They could then move to the federal level. So it's not as though these individuals all of a sudden, you know, just drop the cloak of power and go back with the common ruck. No, they stay in politics, and as she says, they cultivate these connections in order to maintain positions of power in politics in some way. So, I mean, that is an issue. You know, for California, one of the issues in California that she mentioned is that when you reach your limit, you're banned for life from running again. So in some states, you have to sort of take some time off, and you can switch to the other institution, or you can even come back to the same institution so that somebody can just run right back in. In California, they prohibit you from coming back. So you only have a couple of options, maybe lobbying or going back to your previous profession. And the idea is this is a way to grab new people who really do have deep connections to the public and to the community, because you're going to run out of bodies to fill these slots after a while.
Well, and she brought up making it more difficult for people to run for office. We have another example or a question on Facebook from Brad. You know, would only rich people be able to go into politics with term limits applying, meaning that a poor or middle-income person can't just quit their job, serve an office for a term or two, and then be unemployed at the end of their tenure?
And, you know, some of the research that's been done on this has noted that, believe it or not, it becomes actually harder as a lobbyist in states with term limits in many ways, because you don't have set relationships. So it's not as though some incumbent has an automatic advantage because lobbying firms and lobbyists and interest groups are throwing money, because every so often you have an open seat. And open seats are much more competitive. It allows individuals who don't have a well of money to use on their own to run a campaign and win. And so you kind of change the terrain a little bit, and it allows people And I don't know, the data doesn't say exactly sort of median income of people who run, but it does open up some advantage to people who might not otherwise have run, because they don't need to have a war chest in order to try to win.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Tom in Monona. Hello, Tom.
Hi, good morning. Boy, this is a great timely discussion here. First of all, I want to thank Emily for bringing up the topic of lobbyists, because that was part of my comment, but I'll just kind of save that because she really hit it right on the head. But my wish list when it comes to term limits would be this, and it is a wish list. I don't think it'll ever happen, but I think that when we have a president that gets elected that has to come in and clean up the mess from a previous administration, 4 years is definitely not enough time. But on the other hand, 8 years is probably too much, because the last 2 years are just kind of a lame duck situation anyhow. So my suggestion would be that we make the term limit 6 years for everyone, the president, senators, and also for the members of the House. Now, they kind of get shafted because they've got to run every other year, every 2 years. And so I think they definitely should have a little more time. And if we made it 6 years, we could all relax. We wouldn't have to listen to these paid political ads all the time, just once every 6 years. And then I also think, getting back to the lobbyist situation, we should put a time limit or a timeout, let's say maybe 3 years, 4 years, something like that, where you cannot go to work for a lobbyist once you leave office.
Because we have a news break coming up, Tom, first a quick reaction to that last point. I thought there were waiting periods between lawmaking and lobbying.
There are waiting periods, and so they try to, the term was used before, revolving door. You sort of close that off so that people can't just go from a government position and walk right into a position with a lobbying firm or a corporation. It happened a couple of years ago with the Bush administration, and an individual who was very cozy with Boeing helped secure a tanker contract and then went right into Boeing. And it was a violation of the revolving door laws and prohibitions. So that is a problem. Statutes currently help to ameliorate that problem, but, you know, there are still issues and suspicions about how it works.
Yeah. And what about the idea of 6 years for everyone?
Well, a couple of things you have to contemplate about that. I mean, not only is it difficult because you don't get a lot of experienced individuals over a long period of time to help you achieve the policy goals you have, but think about who then will get the power, because it's not like power disappears in Washington or in Madison. Somebody wants it, somebody will use it. Often when you have term limits, it devolves to staffers, bureaucrats, because they are there for a long time, and then they get to generate the policies that sort of gain momentum and are at the top of the pile. They get to drive the debate about what is significant because they have all the information, because they've been around forever. And as a result, you might have elected officials who don't get to grab power and retain it for a long period of time, but unelected officials, sort of these nameless, faceless bureaucrats that we always complain about, they're the ones who are probably going to be able to grab that power and utilize it to their own benefit.
We are hearing the pros and cons of term limits, especially when it comes to members of Congress. All four Republican candidates who are running for Wisconsin's 6th congressional district say they will self-impose term limits on themselves, but also expressing support for constitutional amendments that would limit terms for members of Congress. And that's our big question. Does Congress need term limits or not? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Does Congress need term limits? That's today's big question. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a guest political scientist about why the issue of term limits popped up in the 6th congressional race here in Wisconsin. All four of the Republicans vying to replace the retiring Republican U.S. Representative Tom Petri, who served 35 years in office, are saying that they will self-impose term limits on themselves. There is a proposal in Congress to impose term limits, 12 years for each House, the House and the Senate. And we are talking about the pros and the cons and the politics of term limits. And we are asking you in our big question on air and online, do you support or oppose term limits for members of Congress and why? Or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show and vote in that online poll at wpr.org/joy. We'll also connect the poll to our Facebook page. Charlie Jacobs is our guest. He's an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. And our next caller is Craig in Onalaska. Hi, Craig.
Good morning. I'm not so certain that term limits are a good idea, but I would rather see three suggestions that I think would get fresh blood in the Congress, and that's really the purpose of the discussion. One, I'd like to see that congressional districts are not gerrymandered to ensure that one party is constantly reelected. I think that's a major problem that we have. Second thing is I would like to see public financing so that we get money out of elections. I think, you know, when we the people are hiring somebody, we the people should be paying for those elections. And the last thing is I think we should have the House of Representatives have a four-year time cycle. And the reason for that is so that they're not constantly running for reelection. As soon as they get sworn in, they start their reelection process.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Craig. Well, let's go in reverse order there. Again, changing the House of Representatives term from 2 to 4, that would that also require a constitutional amendment, Charlie Jacobs?
It would. And so, too, most likely is the issue of public financing. So the public financing would be an issue related to First Amendment and speech rights because unless it was completely voluntary, and as we can see in the last presidential election when President Obama said, well, I'm not going to take the public financing because I can get more money raising it on my own than I can get from public financing. It's unlikely that will occur. So that would have to be a constitutional amendment, and so would changing it to the four-year terms in office. And I don't certainly disagree with Craig. I think he's right that and most of the research shows that these members come in and they're what we call single-minded seekers of re-election. That's pretty much their primary goal, is they just sit there and they try and create avenues by which they can win the next election. But you have to keep in mind, so do U.S. senators. I mean, they have 6 years. The information we have about the way in which they have to raise money every single day, because the longer the term in office, the more important the office becomes, and then the more competitive it becomes. So, where 10 years ago $1 million was a lot of money for a Senate race, that's peanuts today. And so you are raising thousands of dollars literally a day to stay competitive in a Senate race. So it just kind of changes. And it makes it sort of a longer term of running for re-election in a single-minded way, but it still occurs. So I'm not sure whether or not that's a Band-Aid or a real cure. And with public financing, again, I think that might help to control some of the competitiveness in the sense of the way in which you have to be competitive by raising lots of money by equaling the playing field. I think that the one that's most doable that he raises is the redistricting. And in fact, in a recent book written by former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, he makes this point. And this doesn't necessarily need a constitutional amendment. If the court would only allow litigants to come to court and make a claim that they were disadvantaged by the system of gerrymandering, we might have a significant change in the way this is conducted. And we could have more competitive races. And that's what I think the public would like to see. And I think drives part of the discussion about term limits.
Yeah. And Craig was saying that the whole push for term limits is mainly, I guess, a push to get fresh blood in Congress. Is that what's behind the push for term limits?
Fresh blood, I think, is high on the list for the public, is that they just feel like they can't get rid of people because they have a built-in advantage. And, yeah, incumbency matters. We have lots of research on this, that incumbents overwhelmingly win at both the state and at the federal level. And so, if you're sort of a guaranteed winner, I think the public feels the only way that you can get someone new in is to make sure that the old person gets flushed automatically. So I think that really does drive it quite a bit.
Yeah. Adana on Facebook says, no term limits. Seniority is sometimes the only way non-corporate sponsored candidates can effectively serve their constituencies. What do you think of that?
I mean, I think it's an interesting idea. Mm-hmm. And again, I think the term limits are a limit on the public as well, because if you like someone and you appreciate the work you're doing, the work they're doing for you, you might want to retain them in office. And if you don't, and you don't like the connections that they have to the corporate world or the lobbying world, then you can boot them out. But you can make the choice as a citizen. And so, that I think is the ultimate argument against term limits.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Congress always has terrible poll numbers, and I think they're even more dismal than usual these days. But a lot of times we like our individual congressperson.
Yeah, that's a funny little data point that's often noted. And actually, we've seen the support for local members come down a little bit, but there's usually around a 50-point difference between our opinion of Congress as a whole and the opinion of our local legislator. And part of that is because our local legislator brings home the bacon, and we appreciate that. They bring the road project, they bring the new community pool, they get a new postal service resource center in our district that creates jobs. And so we appreciate that. But of course, what our local member brings home to us is good, but as we reflect on what other members are bringing home to their districts, that looks wasteful, and you know, and that's something that we have to stop, that pork barrel politics. And so that's the sort of discontinuity in our hatred of Congress, but our love of our member.
Let's go to Janice in La Crosse next. Hello, Janice.
Hi, good morning, Joy. Thank you for taking my call and your guest. I'm 100% for term limits. I feel that this government is so polarized right now, nothing is getting done. And for me, it's this corruption. You know, the lobbyists can go with them, you know, take them all out, get some fresh blood like you were speaking about. This government was never set up like this. I mean, churn these people out. You know, they're in there, they're lifers. You know, they got everything set up and covered. They you know, party line, Democrats one line, Republicans the other. You know, you cannot get anything done. As far I'm pro-life. You're never going to get a Democrat to even go on there. I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican. Go with the issues, but they don't. They just go party line. They're all bought, as far as I'm concerned. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Janice. What about, she thinks that we are so polarized, we are so divided, nothing is getting done. Would term limits do anything about that?
Maybe. Some of the case studies that have been done in states with term limits have suggested that actually polarization increases. And what the researchers have uncovered is that you don't have time to build relationships because nobody's there long enough. And because of that, you don't really have the opportunity to build a rapport, to create trust among individuals, where you can, when it gets really ugly and really contentious, sit down and say, we know each other. You know, our kids have played with each other. Let's hammer this out. Because everybody's got this, you know, this clock ticking about when they're going to be booted out of office. They want to rush and hustle to get their work accomplished, and they don't trust anybody. They always feel like somebody else is trying to pull one over on them, and so there is that issue that you don't build that trust and that civility among members of the institution, and that's a real worry that if you do it in Congress, it'll actually heighten polarization instead of reduce it.
Yeah. So talk some about the what is gained and what is lost by someone like Representative Tom Petri, who has been serving for 35 years in Congress, now retiring. What's gained and what's lost by not having him there?
For, I think, the delegation in Wisconsin, so our members who go to Congress on our behalf, our 8 members of Congress, you lose sort of a touchstone and a leader who can tell, especially the very new members, the way the politics of the state have evolved and how the federal government has been involved in that, because he's got such a long-term memory of how that occurred. And also to be able to talk about how those members and a party and the institution itself works out its problems and how that's changed over time. So you've got that deep institutional memory that's very valuable, both to the constituents in the district and to the entire state. And you also lose his experience and I think the kind of help that he can provide, because individuals know his reputation, know his work. I mean, he has been considered a moderate and someone who can bring together resources to reach consensus on issues. He's part of this very small group of Republicans and a few Democrats who try to reach centrist agreements in the House. So I think you lose that as well, especially in a time when we're so polarized. And lastly, just when you earn seniority, you have a greater opportunity to earn positions as a committee chair and subcommittee chair. And you gain some additional power and influence in that way as well. And if it's in an area that's of real importance to Wisconsinites and his constituents, that can be very helpful, again, in bringing home resources that can be utilized to benefit the state. So all of those, I think, are things that we're going to gain or lose if with his retirement. You know, people will point to the sort of mini scandal, you might want to call it, regarding his investment in the Oshkosh Corporation. And that's that, you know, sort of clubby insider kind of activity that people really loathe about Congress. That, you know, on the one hand, he's advocating for $3 billion worth of contracts for a company that he keeps buying stock in. And that, I think, is incredibly off-putting to the voters. And I think then we gain a measure of trust with a new member who isn't going to use that kind of influence primarily because they don't have it yet.
Yeah. Let's I want to take one more call. Before, John in De Pere. Hi, John.
Yes, my question was, is there some period of time where the benefits maximize, or is 12 years just an arbitrary number? And if not, maybe there should be a number of years where after which benefits for the incumbents basically decrease.
And you're talking about things like pension, or what are you talking about, John?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, and retirement.
Yeah, so I guess he wonders if someone just serves a 1-2-year term, do they get a pension in retirement? Do you know, Charlie Jacobs?
I don't, but that's a really interesting idea. Yeah. You sort of disincentivize people from staying by saying if you go past a certain date. I think that happens with Social Security. I think at some point you stop, you know, accruing extra benefits. And so maybe that's something, you know, that can be considered because, you know, really, the idea of term limits is kind of a cleaver to the problem. There are some other smaller things that you could do to try to affect a change in Congress. And, you know, sometimes people don't look nostalgically back upon the reign of Newt Gingrich because he sort of had a blunt way of doing things. But a lot of people give him credit for a small term limit that exists already within Congress, the House of Representatives, which is when the Republicans are in power, they limit members to 6 years as a chair of a committee, and then you're automatically kicked out, and you get a new chair of the committee to bring in new blood, new policy concerns, new ideas. And so it's sort of an internal term limit. And a lot of scholars and a lot of pundits give a lot of credit to Gingrich because it's a way to keep it fresh in Congress and to make sure that lobbyists can't get their hooks into one person who holds power in a committee forever and controls the way the budget operates there. So, you know, we don't necessarily have to go all the way to the extreme and create term limits for members. There might be some institutional changes that could work very well to at least undermine some of the worst behaviors of members of Congress.
Oh, interesting. Luciana on Facebook says, yes, to term limits for the House and the Senate, and she adds, the Supreme Court. How does the talk of term limits change when we add the Supreme Court into the equation?
Well, the Supreme Court, as everyone knows, have life tenure, and unless they don't behave well, the exact language is serving during a term of good behavior, they get to serve until they die or until they willingly give up the seat. You know, Hamilton in the Federalist Papers argued that this is a way to insulate members of the court from the public because we don't want judges and justices making decisions based upon the way the winds are blowing among the public because they owe their position to the public. They want them to be firmly wedded to the law and the interpretation of the law. And so the concern of the founders was we don't want these individuals sort of randomly deciding cases because that's what the public wants. And this ensured that we would get good legal decisions. Now, the public might think that the court is just as partisan as any other institution today, and so we might as well have term limits because that seems what they're doing. I think it's something to consider. Many states have limits on how many years you can serve on your high court or on a lower court, and it doesn't seem to have affected the quality of justice. That's sort of a nebulous evaluation, but most scholars would argue that term limits in courts doesn't seem to affect the outcome of cases.
Yeah. So what's your assessment, Professor Jacobs? Might we someday see a constitutional amendment for congressional term limits pass?
I would say it's unlikely. I think there would have to be a real groundswell from the public. And one of the reasons I say that is because for those of us who are old enough to remember the 1994 elections, Newt Gingrich and Dick Armey introduced the contract with America, and one of the points was 12-year term limits. It didn't pass the House and hence never went to the Senate. But, you know, in 2006, when 12 years had expired for those who had been elected, 25 of the members who said that they would step aside after 12 years kept on going. And so I think once you get in power, it's hard to give it up. And I'm not sure that members of Congress are going to vote a constitutional amendment to limit their own power and their own terms in office. And, I mean, again, as I mentioned earlier in the program, Representative Scott Krug from Rome right now is going through the same thing. And his argument is, look, I've gained some experience, and that's good for my constituents. Why would I now step aside and have a rookie take my place who won't be able to do the good things that need to be done for my particular region? So I unless there is some citizen movement at the national level, and there is a vehicle you can do that by trying to call a constitutional convention, I don't really see it happening.
Well, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy. Have a great morning.
Charlie Jacobs, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Well, you've heard the pros and cons of term limits for members of Congress. What do you think? It's time for you to sound off on today's big question. Do you support or oppose term limits for Congress? And why or why not? We're going to give you 30 seconds in this sound-off poll coming up. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Time for you now to sound off on this week's big question. Do you support or oppose term limits for Congress? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. 30 seconds for you to vote and state your case. Dave in Elroy is with us. Hello, Dave.
Hi. I don't think that term limits matter. I think the big problem is money. In politics, if we can solve that problem, we would do away with the problem of a few people having a whole lot of influence, and we wouldn't even have to talk about term limits.
All right. Thank you very much, Dave. Thomas in Cuba City, what do you think?
Oh, I'm right on with Dave. I think money is the problem. Experience is important. Experienced politicians are very helpful to a constituent as long as they're not bought off. I think we need to get the money out of it. If the playing field's leveled and these people can't get super rich off staying in public office for 30 years, then they'll either do a good job because they want to, or they'll limit their terms themselves.
Well, that's what the four Republican candidates running for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District are saying they will do. They will limit the number of terms that they will serve if elected. So do you support or oppose term limits for members of Congress? Should we have a constitutional amendment that changes the Constitution that says that members of Congress can only serve, for example, 12 years in the House and 12 years in the Senate? That's the current proposal. Ken in Delafield is with us. Hello, Ken.
Hello, good morning. I believe that there should be limits set on time spent in both the House and the Senate. And also, I am on the understanding that when they go in, regardless if it's a short term, one term, or if they're reelected, that they get their full salary after that they leave. So regardless if they were there for 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, or even after 12,
okay, thanks for. I'm sorry, Ken. We have 30 seconds for you to vote whether or not you support term limits or not, and why. Barb and Racine. Hi, Barb.
Hi. How are you? I do not support it if they do receive a salary for the rest of their lives after they are in office. We'll be paying more out for more congressmen who are not there and their wives if they die. So I believe that would be a consideration.
Thank you very much, Barb, for voting. We have Ed on Facebook who says, we already have term limits. It's called voting. If we don't like someone, we can vote them out. But if we do like someone, then why restrict our right to vote for them with artificial term limits? And Jim on Twitter says, term limits are not the answer. If you want to change the Constitution, do so to eliminate gerrymandering districts. All right. Well, thanks very much for all of your support in this sound-off portion of our big question. I think that's going to do it for on-air calls. You can continue voting online at WPR.org/joy. We'll post that poll as well on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Christy Taylor, and to Robin Sherry for producing and directing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.